Welcome to It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Mara Liasson, filling in for Ken Rudin.
And may I just say, it's a pleasure to have you filling in for Ken Rudin, Mara.
And it's a pleasure to be here filling in for Ken Rudin.
Of course, I miss Ken. I always miss Ken when he isn't here, but it is great to have you here with us. And of course, we are also marking this week one of the great historical feats of American political experience, and that, of course, is the extraordinary ability of just about two dozen Republican members of the House who, by gathering together in the otherwise empty House chamber with the lights off and the microphones off, they have been able to beat down oil prices by something like 20%. Is this not what's happening?
It is amazing, isn't it?
I mean, I guess that's what's
happening. Supply and demand overturned by House Republican protest.
And so, and seriously, I mean, Nancy Pelosi adjourned the House last week a little bit early for the August recess, a sacrosanct institution if there is one. And she took off on her own book tour. And, well, the Republicans decided to stay, at least a corporal's guard of them did. And they stayed behind and they continued to go into the chamber and debate as though there were actually a session of the House taking place. And this week they were joined by a famous former member.
If Democrats go around in August and say, well, you know, I'm really for more energy, hoping that Speaker Pelosi will block any vote, I believe they will find, come September, that they are in a clear up or down yes or no. Are you a more energy Democrat or an anti-energy Democrat? And I think at that point there will be a majority in the House in favor of drilling.
Well, that was Newt Gingrich, if you didn't recognize his voice. And it is kind of wonderful to have him back, especially planning an insurrection of sorts for which he is very famous.
He's actually threatening to shut down the government again, or at least threatening to have those who still have offices in the federal government to shut down the government. And we recall back in the mid-1990s when his disputes with the Clinton administration led to government shutdowns twice in the 1995-1996 winter. And now, of course, he's been out of power for almost 10 years since he resigned as Speaker. But he has never entirely gone away and remains the spiritual leader for at least this cadre within the Republican minority.
Yes, and it's easy to forget that for all of Gingrich's kind of self-immolation, he also did lead his party out of the wilderness once.
1994.
And what's often said about him is in the period of 1 hour, he comes up with 1,000 ideas, 999 of them are really wacky, but one of them is really brilliant. The thing that I think he's on to is not so much about the government shutdown, because I don't see how House Republicans could shut down the government, but is this idea of drilling, because drilling is popular. And even though gas prices are falling, as high prices created less demand, in effect, drilling for more oil and doing the Republican approach, which is more of everything. That's
more
their
energy.
Approach. More energy. Just let's conserve. Let's do alternative. Let's drill. Let's do nuclear. Let's do everything. That has been hitting a chord. And it is why you see Obama, the Democrat standard bearer, backing off from his opposition to drilling. He's saying he would accept it as part of a comprehensive compromise if it came to that.
And I think that probably there will be tremendous pressure on Nancy Pelosi to moderate her position as well. At least in the Senate, there is already a coalition of senators from each party who want to put together this comprehensive kind of a package. Now, whether
right,
or not
the gang of 10,
another gang. And in this particular instance, we'll have to see whether or not either party really wants to accept the trade-offs of this compromise package. Now, we should mention that a couple of the members in the House of Representatives have had some important votes to face back home this week, and a couple of the results are already in. Carolyn Cheeks Kilpatrick, longtime member from Detroit, won a very narrow victory in her primary to be renominated in her district back in Michigan. She only got about 40% of the vote overall, but the other 60% of the vote was split between two candidates. Neither one of them managed to quite overtake her, so she is renominated and will, of course, be reelected
right.
in November in that district.
Right.
The other one is Jim Ryan attempted a comeback in his eastern Kansas district that he lost to Nancy Boyd, the Democrat, last election cycle, 2006. He attempted to make a comeback this time, but lost, was not able to win the nomination back for his old seat.
Now, the Boyda seat is one of the top targeted Democratic seats for Republicans. In other words, they want to take that seat back, and Nancy Boyda has quite pointedly refused all help from national Democrats. She's going to run the way she's run before, basically as an independent.
But let's get back to the national picture. And we've already mentioned that both of the candidates, Obama and McCain, have been talking about energy lately. Obama has had to back off of his original no drilling off the coasts by under any circumstances. Now he's talking about something out 50 miles or further off the shore and some kind of compromise. McCain's really gotten an opening here. But on the rest of the ad versus ad front, it's been more tit for tat, and possibly some of the McCain material here has been hurting as much as it's been helping. Now, of course, I'm talking about that ad that he was running that featured a couple of people we don't usually see in political ads, Mara.
Like Paris Hilton and Britney Spears. That was an ad that was widely panned as being silly. Even McCain's mother didn't like it. But it did what the McCain people wanted to do, which was get them back in the game after being crushed by this overwhelming juggernaut of positive Obama coverage coming off of his trip to Europe. And I don't know exactly how much they spent on it. I think it only ran 12 times commercially, but it got probably 12 million mentions or hits or showings on the free media. And not only was it discussed ad nauseum on news programs and the free media, but Paris Hilton herself made her own response ad to it, which was pretty funny.
Hey, America, I'm Paris Hilton, and I'm a celebrity, too. Only I'm not from the olden days, and I'm not promising change like that other guy. I'm just hot. But then that wrinkly white-haired guy used me in his campaign ad, which I guess means I'm running for president. So thanks for the endorsement, white-haired dude. And I want America to know that I'm, like, totally ready to lead.
She goes on, by the way, to give a completely cogent, rational solution to the energy problem by combining both of their positions. Like, why don't we drill now while we're developing all those newfangled alternative energy technologies?
It sounds as reasonable as anything we've heard from anybody else.
Yeah.
All right. The other attempt that the McCain campaign has been making to seize the initiative on the ad front has been to reintroduce us all to the John McCain, who was so popular for a while, at least among some people, at least in the year 2000, when he first ran for president, Maverick John McCain.
Washington's broken. John McCain knows it. We're worse off than we were 4 years ago. Only McCain has taken on big tobacco, drug companies, fought corruption in both parties. He'll reform Wall Street, battle big oil, make America prosper again. He's the original Maverick.
I find this ad really kind of breathtaking in its sheer audacity, because it's got some facts in some senses behind it. But among other things, it starts right out by saying, we're worse off than we were 4 years ago. Well, that's not usually the message of the incumbent president's party.
He doesn't want to be the incumbent president's party. He needs to be a change candidate, too, if he can. And he had a brand that was distinctly different and often in opposition to President Bush, but that brand got muddied. And you'll see why when you hear the Obama answer to the Maverick ad.
He's the original Maverick.
The president and I agree on most issues. There was a recent study that showed that I voted with the president over 90% of the time.
John McCain supports Bush's tax cuts for millionaires, but nothing for 100 million households. He's for billions in new oil company giveaways while gas prices soar, and for tax breaks for companies that ship jobs overseas. The original Maverick, or just more of the same?
Just more of the same is the negative half of the Obama message that he has stuck to through thick and thin. He used it against Hillary Clinton. He's using it against John McCain. And I think this year, when you've got 80-odd percent of Americans saying the country's on the wrong track, it's a pretty powerful message.
It's going to be a little tough, I think, for John McCain to be the John McCain of 2000 and the John McCain of the 2008 Republican primaries at the same time.
And in Obama's attack on John McCain as being in the pocket, as he says, of the oil companies, also allows him to get to that populist ground that he's been seeking recently. He needs to get back to that. He's been sounding a lot more populist, especially as he travels through the battleground states of the Midwest, where that message really matters. Of course, these ads come so fast and furious, but McCain actually had an answer to that Obama ad where he pulled out some tape that we all have been waiting for him to pull out. We all knew it would happen, and that is some tape that was used against Obama in the primaries by none other than Hillary Rodham Clinton.
Let's hear a little of that.
He is a courageous, patriotic American who stands up for what he believes.
I admire Senator McCain greatly, and he's one of the people we model our campaign on because he is very direct, very blunt, and nobody has to guess at what he's thinking.
You know, I love John McCain. He's a great guy.
Since coming to Washington, I believe that the right approach begins with the proposal put forward by Senator Lieberman and Senator McCain.
I know Senator McCain has a lifetime of experience that he will bring to the White House. And Senator Obama has a speech he gave in 2002.
Ouch. The minute she said that on the campaign, everybody said this will appear in a McCain ad, and now it has. And for those of you who don't do voice recognition too well, you heard Howard Dean and Russ Feingold, Obama himself praising McCain, John Kerry. And what was interesting today, of course, is most of them issued statements saying, well, I don't think that anymore about John McCain.
Well, or they could certainly say, yes, I said that in a certain context.
Right, but
you know what I thought as I listened to this again? What a great ad this would have made for Mitt Romney. I mean, this was precisely the point that Mitt Romney and some of the other more conservative Republicans were trying to make against John McCain during the Republican primaries, which was he works with the Democrats all the time he's basically a liberal.
He used to be the Democrats' favorite Republican. One other point about these ads, we're entering the Olympics. Obama's bought about $5 million of ads during the Olympics. McCain has one-upped him by buying $6 million worth of ads in the Olympics. And just a point about the money wars here. John McCain has to spend all of his money before he's nominated because this is still considered the primary for him, and he's operating under the primary campaign fundraising rules, which allows him to spend unlimited amounts of money. The minute he's nominated, he becomes a general election candidate. He has said he would abide by public financing and abide by the spending limits that come with that.
$80 million.
At that point, Obama is going to be sitting on virtually unlimited amounts of money and will be able to blow him out of the water.
Another thing that's popped up, and I think this is really visible across literally every poll that you see, Barack Obama has hit a kind of ceiling. He, generally speaking, doesn't fall below 45%, but he, generally speaking, does not go above 50%. Once in a while, you see an outlier that has him up 51, 52, but it usually drops right back down the next couple, 3 days. Now, at the same time, John McCain seems to be stuck in a range between 40 and 45, just a few points behind him. And as we've been saying for several weeks now, it's remarkable that Obama can't get closer to the generic advantage that Democratic candidates are enjoying in this pro-Democratic year, or this year in which people's animosity towards George Bush is dragging the Republicans down.
Well, the question you're raising is really, really the number one question. In other words, who has maxed out? We don't know.
And here's one way to try to answer that question: vice presidential running mate. That's why we, I believe, have not seen either candidate make the leap. And that's surprising, both because the McCain campaign intimated very strongly that they were going to choose someone before the Olympics. Well, now that's too late. And because we expected Barack Obama to go first, because he doesn't really have any time after the Olympics and before the start of the Democratic National Convention in Denver the day after the Olympics end.
I think that we, the collective we in the news media,
the wisdom
have,
of we.
We gave more stock to the Olympics than the Obama campaign did.
True.
I think the Obama campaign, as we have seen since he started this project 2 years ago, runs on its own internal clock. It does shut out the noise from the chattering classes, and it doesn't mind competing with the last week of the Olympics. I don't think it wants to announce its veep the night of some big gold medal ceremony, but I think it feels like it doesn't have to worry about that. Obama gets incredible coverage just for blowing his nose, and actually he did once blow his nose at a rally and got a tremendous cheer for it, but that they don't have to worry about this. And they have always said, don't expect an announcement soon. So, of course, everybody in the news media said, oh, they're just trying to fool us. We're going to get an announcement before he goes on vacation, because he won't want to go on vacation without having somebody, the number one surrogate, the vice president, left in his stead. I think the Obama campaign is pretty confident. I don't think they're overconfident, but I think they're really sticking to their plan. And that also suggests how they might make this choice. In other words, safe versus a reinforcement of his message. Someone who compliments him or someone who reinforces his message of change and newness. And I think that's really the decision he's facing, if you want to cast it as kind of an Evan Bayh versus a Tim Kaine.
All right. If those are the people that you just threw out a couple of names on the Democratic side, what about John McCain's choices? Some people think John McCain's got a tougher choice
I
to
think
make.
I agree with that. I think John McCain does have a tougher choice to make. Obama can either just reinforce his newness or shore up his inexperience. But McCain has a lot of things to do at once. He has to pick someone who's conservative enough, because he has problems with the conservative base of his party. He has to pick someone who's a reformer, because that's the brand that he of his own that he wants to reinforce. He has to pick someone who's ready on day one, because he is so old.
Well,
if
and
he
because
wins.
Ready on day one is his main campaign
yes.
theme.
But also, just in case he doesn't last for his whole term. You have to have somebody. That means you have to have somebody with some foreign policy experience. You want someone with economic experience, which he lacks. I mean, that's a lot of criteria. For John McCain, I think the safe choice is someone like Mitt Romney.
I was just going to say, the only person who fits all those criteria is really Mitt Romney.
The safe choice is Mitt Romney. He has the economic executive experience. He has been vetted and tested. He ran for president. I think the problem with Mitt Romney is he doesn't reinforce McCain's message of being a reform Republican. And also,
but he's never been to Washington. He's never been an in-Washington type Republican. He is an outer.
Yes, but when Romney tried to restyle himself as the candidate of change in the primary, it fell flat. That's the problem for Romney, although I think in a lot of ways he makes sense. He grew up in Michigan. Michigan is a battleground state. I think the other poll, the other choice for McCain is a Tim Pawlenty, who is a reform Republican. He lacks foreign policy experience. He is from Minnesota, another state that could be in play. And also the thing about McCain, he is a very visceral politician. This is a very, very personal choice. You want to pick someone that you're compatible with. And although I think he probably has warmed up a little bit to Mitt Romney, I think he feels a lot more simpatico with a Pawlenty.
Yes, I think in recent history we've seen how it does not really work for a nominee to choose someone as running mate who we can tell does not really mesh with that personality. For example, Jack Kemp as the choice of Bob Dole in 1996, that didn't work, didn't help, and it was clear to everybody that it was not a happy union. I think the same thing was true of John Kerry and John Edwards in 2004. That never really went to work for Kerry and Edwards. It never went to work for the party.
You shouldn't choose, maybe the moral of the story is you shouldn't choose a vice president based on something, criteria on paper. I mean, it has to be a gut-level decision to a certain extent. Bill Clinton and Al Gore was kind of the classic example of this. Two young, vigorous, southern, border state, new Democrat centrists.
That's right.
And it worked. They looked great together. They remember they were the suburban mamas and the papas when all four of them were campaigning together, Tipper
right.
and Hillary. And
so, that's right.
But this is going to be big, big news. We've never had a candidate as inexperienced as Obama or as old as McCain. The vice presidential choice really matters this year.
And that's it for this week's political podcast.
You can follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/elections.
I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Mara Liasson.
Join us again next week when Ken Rudin will return for It's All Politics from NPR News.